pool, which is called in the Hebrew Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of sick people, blind, lame, paralyzed, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain time into the pool and stirred up the water. Then whoever stepped in first after the stirring of the water was made well of whatever disease he had. Now stop there. The pool of Bethesda has been uncovered archaeologically. They were saying, as it's been through history in modern times, critics of the Bible often say, well, that's not true. We don't have that place there. We haven't seen it. And the answer is just dig a little further, because they keep finding everything just like the Bible said. Things that started out saying this is contrary of all these different things, when they make a Bible discovery, an archaeological discovery, it actually backs up the scriptures in a way that proves it more efficiently and firmly, such as statements that were made and plaques that said a certain word on them that they said they never used those words. And then they find a plaque that used those exact words that nobody ever used that we didn't know about. They just dig deeper and they find out that the scriptures are true. And so the whole world believes in Jesus now. No, not quite. So we're going to get to that. So that's not debated. Millions have visited it. I visited it. There's this really cool church right across the street from it where you go and sit with the big high ceiling and the acoustics, and there's always some ladies in there with these gorgeous voices. When I come in, they give me a ticket that says, "Please, sir, do not sing out loud." You guys will be giving me one soon, I'm sure. But you hear it, people start singing, and everybody, and they sing songs, you know, of, you know, alleluia type songs that everybody can sing, and then they do some in Latin and stuff. But I'll tell you, just lots of love for the Lord going up, and it's anybody who wants to just start singing. And that has nothing to do with the story, but I think that's a way for me to say I went and you didn't, which is very... makes me small and you large, so, you know. Anyway, it was great. I've been there. I've seen it. It's not debated. Here's what is debated. Did an angel really go down? Is John telling us history and what he believes, or is he telling us the story he heard, the legend that you hear? And I'll let you decide what you believe about that, because I'm uncertain. I'm not so sure that an angel went down and touched as much as John is explaining what the belief was of the day. Now, I don't know that. Don't build a doctrine on either one. And don't blame me if you disagree. Just disagree. Because there's reasons to believe the angel did go down and touch, because the people are gathered there. But do you know that there's people who have Jesus' face in a potato chip? Have you heard about all that? And there's places you go where they claim that that God appeared and did this and that. Do you know that? That it's like, does God ever do things? Does he do miracles? Yes. But it seems like the more bizarre you can get, the more people gravitate towards those. This one, I don't know that it's bizarre. Angels came and appeared to the guy, Zechariah, in the temple. An angel came to Mary. But here's the reason that I'm going to give you the reasons I'm not so sure. And it's just I'm not so sure that he's not telling us a legend story and just communicating, you know, oh, yeah, down in Rio de Janeiro, there's a place. And if you go there, you get, you know, because it's been said. Why? Because number one, in this story, I want you to look at it and say, what in here speaks of the character of God that you understand through Jesus Christ and through the rest of his word and how he touches people? Just to give it a balance. Okay? This, number one, encourages competition for blessing. Everybody's there waiting. And as soon as the angel, it's a race to see who can get there first. That sounds like a lot of elbowing is going to happen. Number two, it rewards that competition, because the first one there gets it. So number three, the weakest link, which could be maybe Hollywood can make a TV show and we expose the weakest link. Jesus always reached out to the weakest one rather than ignored the weakest one. And Jesus does, number four, ignore completely that water when he heals the man. I just would ask the question, what in it is like anything we know of God's nature? It seems to be contrary, but I don't know. It could be God worked in a special way so that he'd get this moment to happen. I don't know. It may more speak about human effort for salvation and for healing, how we try to be the one and to get there, and how man tries on his own works and abilities. But this can be debated, and it will be debated, but not by me. I said my piece, I don't know. And it's not important that we know for sure. We need to get what the message is of this story. Jesus comes to this man in verse 5. Now, a certain man was there who had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there, he knew that he had already been in that condition a long time. He said to him, "Do you want to be made well?" The sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up, but while I'm coming, another steps down before me." That does make it sound like a real event happens, huh? Jesus said to him, "Rise, take up your bed and walk." And immediately the man was made well, took up his bed and walked, and that day was the Sabbath. Interesting. Do you want to be healed? Well, 38 years this guy's been an invalid of some kind, maybe unable to walk at all. How many years has he been hanging out by this pool? Kevin, how many years? We don't know. The last service, the guy said 6 years. Just right, like just had to give me an answer. So Luke, he goes 6 years. We really don't know how long he's laid by the pool. We know he's been an invalid, sick for 38 years. He could have been there a long, long time. And it seems like a strange question, doesn't it? I mean, if you came up to somebody who had just broken their arm and was laying on the ground, it was a compound fracture with blood coming out, do you want help? Would you like me to help call the ambulance? I mean, it sounds a strange question. Do you want to be healed? But is it a strange question? Are there people, now I'm going to interrupt my sentence, because when I was younger, I would have said, are there people who don't really want to get healed? They're out there. They want to get healed as long as they don't have to, it doesn't cost them anything, they don't have to change, blah, 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 blah. But now as I'm older, I go, are there people or times in any of our lives? You know, the older you get, rather than becoming more arrogant, you ought to go, man, it could have been me, it could have been me, it's been me sometimes. How many people in their life at some point, and some people in a really huge way, they like the idea of freedom from oppression, freedom from bondage. They like the idea, but don't like the cost. What does it cost to be set free? Well, humans can get used to almost any kind of behavior, and change requires discipline and challenge. You know, if you're laying on the ground, nobody's going to knock you down. But if you stand up, you might get knocked down. And so there's these issues that come up in our lives. And apparently, from Jesus' question, not everybody wants to be healed. If you take the healing to be all kinds of healing and emotional and spiritual strength and addiction strength and weaknesses, as well as physical. And there certainly are people who enjoy the fact that because of their ailment or their weakness, everybody takes care of them and they don't have to do anything. There are people that look for a way to not. There really are. But I don't say that with any arrogance that I'm better. I just think, yeah, it's in the human heart to be that way sometimes. You know, and so for some of you younger people, you could maybe look at it, well, do you want to learn this math question? I don't have anybody help me. I just throw the book out the window. I don't really want to learn that math. And I just say that to find something to relate to, because I also don't want to learn math. I just want my checkbook to add up to more money than I ever thought I had. That's all. Am I asking too much? So not everybody wants to be healed, according to Jesus. But the response of this man may be telling. He doesn't answer Jesus' question directly. Did you ever ask somebody a question, or you were asked a question, or you have a pattern in your life or somebody in your life that you never get a straight answer? It's always like birds circling and they never land. You ask a very direct question and you're just looking for a simple answer, and husbands and wives don't even look at each other. Okay. Just a simple answer. It's not a simple answer. He doesn't answer the question, but gives reasons why it can't happen. Starts with other people. How often are other people in our way, in our minds, that keep us from letting God do what he wants to do in our life? I would say a lot. Scientifically, I would say a lot percent. Whatever other people did to us, whatever other people are doing to us, whatever we perceive of other people, it can really affect, I don't have anybody to help me. In fact, they're tearing me down. And that can be a real issue. I'm not suggesting it isn't. But he starts with other people. I have nobody to help me. Well, why is he still there? I mean, he's 38 years is a long time. And if he's only been there for a few years or a while, I mean, or for maybe almost the whole time, as Kevin suggests, perhaps, if he hasn't made it yet, listen, this is sad but true. Now, those of you who are gaining in age, please bear with the truth. As you get older, the less you move, the less you can move. Okay? The less you move, the less you can move. Does everybody know that's true? So if the guy is not getting stronger, you know, well, I've been eating spinach for years. I'm getting ready to, I'm going to be the first one in soon. No, he's not getting stronger. He's getting weaker. If he hasn't made it yet, pray tell, when's he going to make it? And he's not. Now, he's an individual that this is really happening to, but is it possible there's a picture of the nation of Israel before us as well? They were 38 years in the wilderness wandering, and they've been many generations waiting for the Messiah, but they don't know him when he comes. And you'll find out in a minute that this man doesn't know Jesus, and he didn't find Jesus. Jesus found him, and Jesus healed him, not based on his faith. Is it based on the man's faith? Jesus doesn't say, look at me, do you have faith to be healed? If you just pray in the name of Jesus, say it real loud and strong and long, you know, quiver with your hand. I'm not mocking that those things happen. I'm saying there's no pattern here that you could follow that says this is how healing happens. It's just Jesus of his own will comes to the guy and says, rise up, take up your bed and walk. And he's healed. And he wasn't thinking that Jesus was anything, because you'll find out he doesn't know it's even Jesus or who Jesus is. So Jesus found him and healed him, not based on his faith, but on God's own will. And he did respond. Now, did he respond because his body suddenly felt the jolt? I think probably so. But it's interesting how when Jesus says, rise up and walk and be healed, we don't know exactly how that moment happened, do we? We don't have insight into that. In fact, I would suggest to you, I don't know exactly how it was that I responded to Jesus Christ in faith and became a believer the night that I did. I mean, for weeks, I was fighting like a rabid dog against the God. No, it can't be Jesus. I don't want to hear about Jesus. Turn off the TV. Turn off the radio. Get those people out of my face. You know, I fought tooth and nail. And yet the night that I said, sure, I'll go to the Bible study, I didn't understand any of it. It was all nonsense to me. I was just sitting there going, as I've said, what am I doing here? And then when he puts on the tape, I'm just sitting there, this reel-to-reel tape. Yeah, 38 years is a long time. This is 44 years back. Reel-to-reel, kids, is it's actually a tape that runs through a tape recorder like Maxwell Smart or something. The old Maxwell Smart. You know, we have to explain to kids what a floppy disk is now. That's only been, you know, 15 years ago, floppy disk, 10 years ago. They don't know. You guys don't know what a floppy disk is, do you? You don't need to. So anyway, are you with me? Do you understand the story I'm telling you? If you do, you're crazy because that doesn't make any sense. But I'm going to get there. Watch this. Turn left. Okay. I'm sitting at this tape and the guy's talking. And suddenly I say, I believe in Jesus. Suddenly my heart opens. How did that happen right at that moment? What changed? What happened inside of me? How did God meet me? How did I respond? Was it me? Was it God? Well, it was God because God's sovereign. But does God give us a choice? But, you know, you can go round and round and round. It's a mystery. And it's a beautiful mystery that should be intriguing to you about your own life. When you've ever heard from God and actually listened versus all the times you don't. Think about it. What makes that happen? It's a beautiful thing. It's an amazing thing. It's a mystery. Salvation is clearly by faith in Jesus, but from our human limited side, how this actually happens is somewhat of a mystery. Why did you rise up and walk with Jesus? 10 through 16. The Jews, which means the Jewish religious leaders, not all the people. The Jews therefore said to him who was cured,
It is the Sabbath, and it is not lawful for you to carry your bed.
He answered them and said, he who made me well said to me, take up your bed and walk. And they said to him, who is the man who said to you, take up your bed and walk? But the one who was healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn, and a multitude was in that place. Now afterwards, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, see, you've been made well. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you. The man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus who made him well. Listen, if an accident happens out on Route 9, and God forbid, Waller Road, there's two groups of people besides rubberneckers who are going to show up. That means people that slow down like some of you do to make more accidents by looking at it. Okay, so I try to just go at a steady, get past it, and that's the goal. But and I'm probably arrogant there. But anyway, I drove home from Oneonta in the snow, and it was really amazing how people would stop when they didn't need to. But be that as it may, it's my personal problem, and you're not here for that. There's two kinds of people that show up at an accident scene. One of them is the police. And the police come to assign guilt, responsibility. They also come to do other good things, and I'm not knocking the police. They come to help, too, and direct traffic. But they're there, part of their job, and the reason they're there is, okay, what happened here, and who is at fault? And there's another group of people that come to an accident. Who are they? Paramedics. The paramedics show up. Do you know they're not interested in who's at fault at all? They just want to know who is hurting because they're there to bring healing. And some people, you just see it in their character and the way they operate, they are always the cop. Like, who's at fault here? We got to get to the bottom of this. We got to make sure that the right thing is done. You know? And some people, and listen, there seems to be a combo here for Jesus. He encompasses all because some people are only paramedics. Let's just heal everybody up. But there does sometimes have to be a clarity about what happens so that we can move forward. We would not suggest that we couldn't because Jesus says to this man, you've been healed. He's the paramedic. And he's a bit of the cop, if you will. Maybe you don't like that term, but forgive my analogy. He says, go and sin no more, lest the worst thing happen. Now, we'll talk about that issue in a minute. But these guys are looking to assign blame for something that's good. And while it's true that sometimes we need to speak to a fault and clear up things and deal with problems, Jesus does that with this man. The religious leaders show us how far, and this is scary for a quote-unquote religious leader, they show you how far you can be from God and from a godly attitude. It doesn't matter that you're a part of the church. It doesn't matter you're in leadership. It could actually work against you if you get hardened in that process and self-righteous in that process. People are amazed, and they're a religious person. Well, actually, these were religious leaders who saw that to it that Jesus was crucified. It was God's hand, but these guys were not what you'd call, you wouldn't invite them to dinner, not with what you know now. And you know you wouldn't be invited to dinner at their house. So these guys show us how far you can get from a godly attitude. And their fence that they built around the law. When I tell you a fence, it most likely, as soon as you hear the word fence, you think of wood slats or cyclone fence. Think not of this. In those days, they had a fence that was made out of mud, brick, stone. And you know, when you build a fence, it can keep stuff out, keep stuff in, but you can't see over it. And they couldn't see past themselves. And the law that they added to God's law was meant for blessing. Their law was all these rules to make sure you didn't break God's law, which just bound the people up. It blinded them. And if this guy's been 38 years in Jerusalem, lame, and been coming for many years perhaps to this spot, there had to be some of these guys who knew him. And they knew that he's a guy that could never walk. And you don't see any shouts anywhere that Jesus healed. You never see the religious leaders going, whoopee, let's throw that weird hat up in the air and rejoice and dance, do a jig. You never see that. They're never rejoicing. They're never amazed at the miracle. And because some people can be so hard-hearted, even miracles will not move them an inch. There are people who say, if you show me, let me see a miracle from God, then I'll believe him. And it's not the truth. I've asked people, and some people are honest. I said, if God did a miracle in front of you right now and showed that it was Jesus Christ and that he wants you to follow him and lay aside your sin and follow him, would you do it? And I have had honest people say, yeah, probably not. I'm not ready. That's an honest soul. That's a good, that's the, you know, at least they're being honest about it. I'm sure I wasn't honest. I would have said, of course I would. Real quick, just of course I would. I would do this. I would do that. You know, words are cheap, aren't they? For all of us. And so these guys are just so hard-hearted, miracles won't move them an inch. I don't think we understand often how much due needs to be given to the nature of man, the rebellious nature of man. It's not a put down to say we have no good qualities. It's not to say you don't. I love people. I love people's quirkinesses and differences and stuff. I mean, probably because I'm so quirky and people put up with me. It makes, you know, makes me want to be more that way. But I think people are interesting and cool and also painful. But that's all of us, right? You can't sit aside from people and say, people are like this, but I'm what? What are you like? A dog? A bird? God? You're a people. So you're like the rest of us. You're quirky. You're weird. You really are. You just have these little weird things about you, and people put up with you. And they do with me. And we do with each other. And it's okay. But man has a real problem, and it's not being quirky. It's being rebellious against God. And we hardly touch the surface of how deep that can run and how destructive that can be. So they only see that he's breaking their law, and he doesn't even know who Jesus is. He only knows I'm healed and he's told to walk, so that's what he does, rightly so. But I love this about Jesus. Jesus does not leave unfinished business. Now, in your life today, you may say, oh, pardon me, Mr. Big Mouth up there. I have a lot of unfinished business that I haven't figured out, that God hasn't taken care of in my life. Well, first of all, you're not done. You're not done. He says when you're finished and when the job's finished. So you don't know what he's fully doing or not. But it's the bigger scope of things that he is going to come to people and he is going to make himself clear to them. And the question isn't, why hasn't he come to that person, that person, and that person? The question for you and me is while we want to help with that, we want to be very in tune with, am I receiving the clarity that God has for me? Because you're the only person you ultimately control. Even you parents, you're just getting your kids ready to leave you and go out and say, yeah, I don't have to listen to you anymore. And they really are being prepared for that. And the way I prepared my kids, I said, you're right. And they didn't say it like that. I just said, you know, you're 4 years away from, you know, making your own decisions about school and about cars and about dental work and your own decisions about money, like how you're going to pay for those things. You know, now you may stay here and we may help you, but that's based on us having a real relationship, you know. But you're so close to being out on your own, and every decision in your life is going to be yours to make. I wanted my 14-year-old to know, there's an end to all this. I'm not looking to control you the rest of your life. I'm looking to prepare you for life. And I'm going to let you go as much as I can, every chance I get, that I, within the realm of my responsibility to you. So understand that I'm not here to hold your, you know, clip your wings, but also understand that there is some commitment here involved in what you receive and don't receive and engage in and don't. So it was the 18 and out plan. It doesn't mean they're gone at 18. It just means that we had to be ready for that because they could make that decision anyway, and I could not prepare them for that. And it's better to prepare them by saying, that's right, you will choose every single thing you do within a very short time. Those years are going to go quick. They're not in such a hurry anymore. They start thinking about stuff, And it doesn't fix everything, and I wasn't a perfect parent, but I think that's an important thing. So Jesus doesn't leave unfinished business. He's prepared this guy, and now it says he found him in the temple. See, that was great that he went to the temple. He went to church, got healed, and he went to church. That's good. Being in church isn't enough. Jesus wanted this guy to have clarity. Being in church wasn't enough. Jesus wanted this guy to get it. And he comes to him and says, you see what he said. And the guy says, who is he? It's me. This is sin no more. Unless the worst thing come upon you. You know, I don't know what this man did, but I know that some people say God never judges sin through human frailty and weakness or through natural disaster. He never does that. That's not my God. And I know people who say God always does that, and they think everything that happens is God judging. I say we throw out both of those because there's no pattern that you can say this is exactly it. In John chapter 9, the disciples had that mindset. Whose sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Jesus says, time out, boys. Nobody sinned, neither in this regard. But this is just the glory of God. The man was born blind because life is fallen on earth. And now I'm going to show you what it means to be healed and touched. Here, and with the woman in adultery, Jesus says, go and sin no more. Are you going to say that God doesn't say, and he says to this guy, or a worse thing will happen? Was this guy getting drunk and speeding on his motorcycle and had a wreck? Well, we know he wasn't doing that. Was he climbing out the roof of a building of somebody else's house where he was with the wife of a man that was coming home? And he fell? And he got paralyzed? I don't know. I don't know. Do you understand that? I'm saying I don't know. Do you understand there's a lot of possibilities of why he was ill, and it was attached to the fact that he wasn't living a very good life. You know, you reap what you sow. If you sow the wind, you reap the whirlwind. I go out here today and say, phooey, somebody was mean to me at church and get drunk and get in a wreck. You know, I might lose pastoring this church. I don't lose God because I sin, but everybody here would be very disappointed. Nobody more than my wife. And, you know, I would need some kind of restoration, and I would probably go to jail. Is God being mean to me? Is he judging me? Well, actually, I'm just receiving the reaping of what I sowed. Can God orchestrate a situation? Can God orchestrate a storm? Read the book of Jonah. So what do you do with all that? You don't know. God's God, and we're men and women. And so we don't just automatically say, God didn't do that, like we know that. And we don't automatically say, God did that, when we don't know that. We stay within the realm of what we do know. I know what people in America need, not because I'm smart. I know they need Jesus. I know that bad happens and our world unfolds and unravels like a sweater getting that thread pulled out. The more you disobey God, the further you go. And I see the fruit of that. I think God can withhold rain and blessing or bring rain and cursing. I do believe that. Because he loves people enough to get their attention. But not everybody gets the attention. These guys, these Pharisees who are religious leaders, would never receive the miracles of Jesus. So there you go. It isn't about us knowing everything that happens. Don't carry that burden. You don't know. But you know how to point people to Jesus through every circumstance. And if you don't, we're going to talk about that for a minute. I think you do. I also think you're very attentive people who want to learn God's word. So anything I say about some of the things I'm going to say are a generic statement not aimed at you. Because this guy, Jesus, comes to him and speaks to him and clarifies to him. And I have friends who both the husband and wife were not Christians. They were Jewish in New Jersey, and they went both to a New Age conference. They were seeking for God or confused in their life, and they went to this weird, weird New Age thing. And while everybody else was doing weird stuff, they heard the voice of God and had visions of God who told them, I want you to worship me through my son, and he didn't tell them who his son was. I'm just telling you a story that actually happened. There's two friends of mine, Barry and Cheryl Shaw. And then later, Barry's driving down the road, and his wife had another experience where the Lord spoke to him. And he said, okay, I'm trying to follow you, God. I don't really know how, and I don't really know who your son is. I mean, he wasn't astute to Christianity, even though he was a brilliant lawyer. And he turns on the radio in a Christian station, which he never listened to, but he's thumbing through the radio, and he gets a Christian station. The guy says, and we worship God through his son, Jesus Christ. And he goes, oh, that's it. And you say, well, that's so flaky how it was for him. Well, he's been an elder in a church. He's been stable with the Lord, written articles for God, and given a lot of help to other people for 20, 30 years now. The fruit's there. God met a guy who didn't know who Jesus was, but God was leading him. And his heart had to be open. And how that works, that's one of those miracles. His wife as well. I love it. It makes me think about helping someone see more clearly. It won't always be the radio. Sometimes it's going to be you. Sometimes it's going to be you. And you know, there's a couple in the Bible, Aquila and Priscilla in Acts 18. You have to turn there. I'm going to tell you a little bit about them and Apollos. Hey, man, if you're getting ready to have more kids, I mean, you can do those. Aquila could be a girl's name today. So you could use Aquila and Priscilla. You know, that's like Horatio. Those are names, you know. Maybe not. Anyway, they're strong believers in the Messiah. Remember, the Christians didn't really call themselves Christians. They called themselves followers of the way of Jesus. The world put the term Christians on us. And we've taken it, so now it's here. But, you know, it was much more about not your identity wasn't in that name. It was in being a follower, a disciple of Jesus. These are disciples. And Apollos is a guy who's from Rome where they were from. And he's very skilled. He's very wise. He's very passionate about God, but he doesn't know Jesus yet. He knows the Messiah is coming. He hasn't heard the whole story. He hasn't put it together. He gets there, and it says Aquila and Priscilla took him in and showed him the road to salvation. They showed him more perfectly, more accurately, the way of truth. I love that. Look at your front of your bulletin. We'll go quickly through this concept, but be diligent. Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. That means cutting a straight line, like if you're cutting material or cutting a tent cloth or canvas like Paul would be. Rightly dividing the word of truth, but shun profane and idle babblings, for they will increase to more ungodliness. You say, well, okay, Paul's telling Timothy to study and be approved to God, but isn't he an elder, a guy, a bishop over a bunch of elders and churches? Yes, he was. So what does that mean? What does it mean when Paul tells Timothy and Titus, an elder must be a man of good report of these qualities, not a drunkard, and he's got to be good with his family, and he needs to be. So does that mean, okay, but the average Christian can be a drunkard? He doesn't have to be good with his family. The average Christian can be a loser about his spiritual. Is that what it means? Of course not. It means everybody, this is a standard of what maturity that we're looking for in all of us. These are things that all followers of Christ, all disciples should be moving towards. But if somebody's going to take a leadership responsibility, he better be in a place where these things are happening in his life. It doesn't tell everybody else, just go do whatever you want. You're just a Christian. You're not a leader. That's ridiculous, right? That doesn't make any sense at all. And that's not what the Bible teaches. There's a lot more all of you, how we should be towards each other. There's responsibilities of leadership and teaching, but we're all to be seekers after the Lord's way. And I commend you for being those people. You know, it's kind of like this. Before 9/11 and just in peaceful times, the National Guard. And I'm not suggesting, as what I'm going to say, that the National Guard guys are slack. I'm just saying, if you were in the National Guard, you went once a month to your program to do, and we're in a total peacetime, and nobody has any thoughts of war or anything like that, you kind of go, probably, just like all of us, yeah, you do your job, you learn a little bit, you know, hang out. It's great. It's a weekend away. You know, hang out with the guys or the gals or whatever and do your stuff, you know. Now all of a sudden, is there a difference? If you're going for your month at the, you're going to the National Guard for the weekend because you're preparing to go the next month to Iraq to fight a war. Do you think the mentality of those people changes? The focus of attention. Are you putting in time, hanging out, or are you focused? Are you in a war or are you not? Is there a spiritual battle going on in your world, in the world we live in? Yeah. So to take seriously, you know, I don't care if you physically take notes or not, because I have learned from this congregation that people have told me, if I try to take notes, I lose track. And I'll grant you that. But let me suggest to you, if you were at some business thing and you normally take notes and you're good at taking notes, why aren't you taking notes now? If that is good for you. Because here's the thing, if tomorrow, and it's just to make a point, not to, I'm going to scrutinize everybody's note-taking. If tomorrow you had to share what you know about John chapter 5 with somebody who's in desperate situation and you knew you were going to have to share what you're learning today, how intently would you be listening? Even if you disagree, that's okay. Go, well, I'm not sure about that. I better go home and check that out, what Rick said, because I'm not sure he's right about that. Now, I'm not saying we have to be overwhelmed. What do you want to do, oppress us when we come in here? I thought we were singing and just... I'm just suggesting that we have a blessing like Aquila and Priscilla. To take. Do you have people in your life that need to be more accurately told the way of Jesus Christ? Are they all around you? Because if they're not, I want to find out your world. It must be an enclave somewhere of super Christians. Because I meet people all the time that are confused. You can't just say, do you believe in Jesus? Oh, yeah. And the big man upstairs, you bet. It doesn't mean anything. You got to really get to know people. I went to the hospital. Listen, I have failed, even as a pastor. It's not like you don't fail because you're a pastor. It actually reveals itself bigger, if you will. I was in Oregon. We had thousands of people in our church, so consequently, I'm sent to the hospital to, I'm an assistant pastor. One of my responsibilities at some point was to go to the hospital and visit people, so you got people who are friends of people who don't even go to church or whatever, but they ask you to go visit them, which is a good thing. And what's your job when you go to the hospital? I've told you before, many of you, it's quite an interesting thing to go into a room with people who are sitting like this, that don't want, you're like the priest that's coming to perform last rites, and they don't want the person to die. Sometimes they are going to die. And they don't want you to come in there with your religious stuff and make this person feel guilty. It's fun. It's just the most fun you can ever have. And actually, it became wonderful because I was able to decide that I would ignore the stares and focus on the person. And many times these people are in tears and really embracing, and not everybody all the time. But the person I usually got to reach, and you don't know if they're saved or not. But, you know, one time I went to the hospital. I'm in a hurry. Oh, I got to go see this guy. Somebody said, what's his name? And I go up there. Hey, Joe, hey, Pete, he's going to go into a surgery that could be very serious. He could die. But he also could live. So I kind of said, are you trusting the Lord? I said things like, are you trusting in the Lord? Are you trusting God to just, do you have hope in him? Yeah, I do. Real general. And I just accepted. He goes, yeah, I am. I'm going to pray for you. I could use some prayer. Sure, yeah. And I went down to my car, like checking off. I did it. I was a good boy. I did. And then somebody was in the car with me. And I know God's in the car with me all the time, but I really know he's in the car with me when I did something wrong just before this. Do you have this experience? I'm sitting in the car, and it's like, oh, I got that done. Oh, really? Did I miss something, Rick? Huh? You didn't do, what did you do? I went and shared with that guy. No, you didn't. Do you know if he's saved? Do you know if he understands Jesus? Do you know anything other than how you trust in the Lord? Hey. Yep, I had to get out of my car and go back up there. I said, you know, Pete, sorry, whatever his name was, Pete, sorry, I'm back. Because I really feel like I left here and I didn't really give you a chance to share with me. When I ask you if you're trusting the Lord, do you understand who Jesus Christ really is? Do you know that he died for your sins? Do you know the reason that you can have hope that if you live, you can live for him? If you die, that you can go to heaven, you will go to heaven, is because of the blood of Jesus. I asked him those questions and talked to him. And, you know, I'd like to tell you this beautiful story where he just came to the Lord right there. No, he did believe. He confirmed. But see, my job wasn't just to be a nice guy, a little comfort. My job was to give him, make sure of that guy's, to the best that I could. He could have shut me down. If he says, listen, I don't want to talk about it, I'd say, okay. Then I'd probably say a couple of things and then pray and leave him. But, you know, don't sell yourself short. God, last week in Jonah, he's on a boat with all these sailors. No offense. And, you know, other people brought up that the sailors are probably a rough group of guys. But, yeah, they started praying to all these different gods because they're going down and they knew it. And the thought came to me there, you know, how much God must have loved these guys. That even though Jonah was being a rat and rebellious, God sent him to them so that they would hear about the God that created the heaven and the earth. God loved those guys. You go places where people may be really jerky and foolish and blah, blah, blah. And God's got you there because he really loves those people. And he wants to love them through you and me. Listen, we're not all called to be scholars, but we're all tempted to take shortcuts, like the shortcut I just told you about at the hospital. Aren't we? Am I alone there? Do you find yourself taking shortcuts when God's saying, this is serious stuff? We are in a war, spiritually. You know, do you find that more people need an accurate understanding of salvation? So listen, here's an example of something you can do that'll help you. And I'll be much calmer than last service, you'll be glad. you know, it's like this. If you have been a Christian for 10 years, and you haven't read through the New Testament 10 times, you got some work to do. And I would suggest that when the book comes out that says numerology, how to know all the secrets of the Bible by counting every seventh letter of each word, that you don't buy those books. That you don't waste time with these theory things and ethereal things and all these fluffy things and idea things that people come up with. If you haven't even read through the New Testament, don't have a handle on it. Do you have time? I could go through the books that are out there that people read that are like, how do you have time for this? Now, if it's Bible doctrine and teaching and instruction, or if you're mature enough to where you got a good handle and you want to check, I'm not controlling this, I'm suggesting to you. You have a limited amount of time. Focus your energy on what's going to really be solid instead of books about stuff that is so hyper, like maybe it's real. Maybe it has some basis. If you don't know the Bible frontwards, don't try to learn every seventh letter. It's got a real message that you need to know. Does that make sense to you? For some, it's probably not. It bothers you that I'm saying it, but I'm sorry. I think that's a big mistake and it's a trap. Of all this stuff that's kind of like angels touching water, like I want to learn all about that. Well, you can't really learn about that. We don't know what that was all about. I know what I can do with somebody. I don't have to tell them, no, that wasn't real. I can say, whatever happened there, let me tell you what Jesus came to do. Regardless of an angel touching, Jesus didn't come to get the one who could jump in the water first because it's not by human effort. Are you trying to please God by your own works and your own efforts? Let me tell you about what salvation in the Bible is really about. And I could go down a list of things about that angel, not saying it didn't happen. It doesn't matter if it happened or not. That doesn't matter. It'll never affect your life. What really will affect your life is if you can help other people find out who Jesus is. And this is the passion. I said I wasn't going to get excited. I guess I lied. But I see these books, and I just don't bring them to me. Don't bring them to me to look at. Because I don't understand it. Unless they're solid scripture basis, they're taking you away from the Word of God and from learning what His Word really teaches. And so that's my beef. But anyway, read this Word. But let me tell you one more thing before we go, and this is pretty important because I said it at the beginning, and I think I mean this with all my heart. If I misrepresent it, please forgive me and do better than me. If I misrepresent anything I'm saying to you, be forgiving to me and pray for me, and you do better. Do better. Don't ignore it. Just do better. But I don't read, we don't read, we don't study, we don't learn history of the Bible and all these things to become spiritual eggheads. I can't sit up because my head's falling over. I'm so filled with knowledge that I think I know. That's not what we're doing. That's not our goal. But we learn to know the Word so we can know the God of the Word so that His Word guides us to our knees. And then when we go to our knees, we understand ourself. You want to understand yourself? Read the Bible. Because the Bible tells you, it tells me when I'm like one of those Pharisees and I'm the cop instead of the paramedic. I read the Bible and I find out that I'm not trying to figure out who can I tell. You're not letting the Lord heal you. I don't need to do that. I'll let the Lord tell other people that unless He puts me in a position to help somebody. But I can tell you who I see in that story, me. How I don't let God do in my life. Do you see yourself in that story? Are you letting God do everything He wants to do in your life, or do you make excuses? I got to say that I have a lot to learn. So I'm learning the scriptures and all that, but where I'm learning is how much I need Jesus. Are you? That's what I'm learning. And that's what I want to learn. And I want it to bring me to my knees, and I understand myself, and I understand you better because I understand the scriptures, and I understand me. That doesn't mean I understand everybody perfectly. That's not my goal. God understands you perfectly. We are also there. The scriptures are here so that we'll learn what Jesus told us was the greatest thing. And I thank you for being this kind of people to learn the greatest measure according to Him. And according to Him, we'll get there someday in John 13. By this shall all men know you're my disciples if you have love one to another. Now, having love one to another doesn't mean, okay, then forget all this knowledge stuff. We don't need to know the Bible. No, you love people by, one of the ways you love them is that you find ways to understand how to help them. If you say, hey, Rick, I understand that you play the guitar. Will you help me learn the guitar? Then I probably would take some time to find some of the papers I have with chords and chord structures and think about what I'm going to present to you, you know, because I've been with a guitar teacher who I should have went with one my dad said, and when I went and sat with a guitar teacher, he said, you play this, da-da-da, da-da-da-da, da-da, he went, for about 15 minutes of our half-hour session was him playing lead guitar and me just doing rhythm, which I already knew. He wasn't teaching me. He needed to take some energy to help me learn the guitar. That's love. That's caring about your responsibility, right? So we don't want to be eggheads, but we want to love people properly because this is how all men will know we're His disciples. And I thank you for being those people. I speak boldly about these things because I see it in our culture and the need, but I also thank God for people around me who are doing it. And I guess there's none of us that couldn't do better, right? So stand with me, would you?